Chapter 22. The Waiting Game.
To Hades, the loss of every Felix brought back the sadness of the first Felix's death. On that occasion, it had been a terrible blow. Not only the loss of a trusted friend and colleague in crime, but also the terrible realization that the alien emotions of loss he had felt betrayed his half-human ancestry, something he abhorred. It was little wonder that he and the first Felix had got on so well. Like Hades, Felix was truly debased and amoral. Sadly for Felix, he did not share any of Hades' more demonic attributes, and had stopped a bullet in the stomach the day that he and Hades attempted to rob the Goliath Bank in Hartlepool in 1975. Felix accepted his death stoically, urging his friend to carry on the good work, before Hades quietly put him out of his pain. Out of respect for his friend's memory, he removed Felix's face and carried it with him away from the crime scene. Every servant expropriated from the public since then had been given the dubious honour not only of being named after Acheron's one true friend, but also of wearing his features.
Melinda Floss, Life After Death for Felix Tabula Rasa. Bowden placed the ad in the Swindon Globe. It was 2 days before we all sat down in Victor's office to compare notes.
"We've had 72 calls," announced Victor. "Sadly, all inquiries about rabbits."
"You did price them kind of low, Bowden," I put in playfully. "I am not very conversant in matters concerning rabbits," asserted Bowden loftily. "It seemed a fair price to me." Victor placed a file on the table.
"The police finally got an ID on that guy you shot over at Sturmey Archer's. He had no fingerprints, and you were right about his face Thursday. It wasn't his own."
"So who was he?" Victor opened the file.
"He was an accountant from Newbury named Adrian Smarts. Went missing 2 years ago. No criminal record, not so much as a speeding fine. He was a good person, family man, churchgoer, and enthusiastic charity worker."
"Hades stole his will," I muttered. "The cleanest souls are the easiest to soil. There wasn't much left of Smarts by the time we shot him. What about the face?"
"They're still working on that. It might be harder to identify. According to forensic reports, Smarts wasn't the only person to wear that face."
I started. "So who's to say he'll be the last?" Victor guessed my concern, picked up the phone and called Hicks. Within 20 minutes, an SO-14 squad had surrounded the funeral parlour where Smarts' body had been released to his family. They were too late. The face that Smarts had been wearing for the past 2 years had been stolen. Security cameras, unsurprisingly, had seen nothing. The news of Landon's upcoming wedding had hit me pretty badly. I found out later that Daisy Mutler was someone he met at a book signing over a year earlier. She was pretty and beguiling, apparently, but a bit overweight, I thought. She had no great mind either, or at least that's what I told myself. Landon had said he wanted a family, and I guessed he deserved one. In coming to terms with this, I had even begun reacting positively to Bowden's sorry attempts to ask me out to dinner. We didn't have much in common, except for an interest in who really wrote Shakespeare's plays. I stared across the desk at him as he studied a small scrap of paper with a disputed signature scrawled upon it. The paper was original, and so was the ink. The writing, sadly, was not. "Go on, then," I said, recalling our last conversation when we were having lunch together. "Tell me about Edward de Vere, the Earl of Oxford." Bowden looked thoughtful for a moment. "The Earl of Oxford was a writer. We can be sure of that. Mears, a critic of the time, mentioned as much in his Paladis Tamia of 1598. "Could he have written the plays?" I asked. "He could have," replied Bowden. "The trouble is, Miz also goes on to list many of Shakespeare's plays and credits Shakespeare with them. Sadly, that places Oxford, like Darby and Bacon, into the frontman theory, according to which we have to believe that Will was just the beard for greater geniuses now hidden from history. Is that hard to believe? Perhaps not. The White Queen used to believe 6 impossible things before breakfast, and it didn't seem to do her any harm. The frontman theory is possible, but there are a few more things in favour of Oxford as Shakespeare. There was a pause. The authorship of the plays was something that a lot of people took very seriously, and many fine minds had spent lifetimes on the subject. The theory goes that Oxford and a group of courtiers were employed by the court of Queen Elizabeth to produce plays in support of the government. In this, there seems some truth. He opened a book and read from an underlined passage. A crew of courtly makers, noblemen and gentlemen, who have written excellently well, as it would appear if their doings could be found out and made public with the rest, of which number is first that noble gentleman, the Earl of Oxford. He snapped the book shut. Putnam, in 1598. Oxford was given an annual grant of £1,000 for just such a purpose, although whether this was for writing the plays or another quite different project, it is impossible to tell. There is no positive evidence that it was he who actually penned the plays. A few lines of poetry similar to Shakespeare's do survive, but it's not conclusive. Neither is the lion shaking a spear on Oxford's coat of arms. "And he died in 1604, I said. "Yes, there is that. Frontman theories just don't seem to work. If you think Shakespeare might have been a nobleman anxious to remain anonymous, I should forget it. If someone else did write the plays, I should be looking at another Elizabethan commoner, a man of quite staggering intellect, daring, and charisma. Kit Marlowe?" I asked. "The same." There was a commotion on the other side of the office. Victor slammed down the phone and beckoned us over.
"That was shit. Hades has been in touch. He wants us in Hicks's office in half an hour."